Learning applied into leadership is a ripple effect that can help change the world for good. Welcome to the podcast, Small Things Make a Big Difference. My name is Spencer Holt. I get the opportunity to interview leaders all over the world and discover the small habits they do on a consistent basis that has made a big difference in their own lives and the many people that they interact with. To learn more about what I do at Global Leader Group, listen at the end of this episode. But for now, let's jump into this week's topic, and may we all be more intentional in who we're becoming and the impact we can have with others. This week on Small Things Make a Big Difference, a great friend of mine. Well, I say great because I think we are in a very short period of time have hit a connection of what I would call soulful familiarity.
Yes.
Eric A. Booker, welcome to Small Things Make a Big Difference.
I'm so pumped to be here. Thanks for having me.
Without any further ado, Eric, tell the world and our listeners who you are and what you do.
Yeah. So again, I appreciate the opportunity. I want to take a moment. I just want to thank a mutual friend, Scott O'Neill, for, like you said, for bringing us together. But I am a husband. I am a father of seven kids that range in age. Actually, we had a birthday the other day. So the bookend turned three and our oldest is 21. I have been in some form of sales or sales leadership for much of my career. Professionally, I'm involved in mergers and acquisitions. But actually, 2 weeks ago or 2 years ago, almost to the day, I started a podcast all about culture and leadership. And it is shocking to me how that has taken off. The guests that we've been able to have, yourself and Scott included, all the way up to, we were just talking about Devin Harris, one of the original four to crew the Jamaican bobsled team, and sort of everyone in between. And it's just been such a unique journey to host that podcast.
I love it. And by the way, so folks, if you haven't checked out Eric either on LinkedIn or his podcast, the name of the podcast, Eric?
Council Culture.
Council Culture is, it's amazing. And your guests are incredible. And so check that out. But I'd love to just, first of all, you have seven kids.
Yes.
So you're busy. Second of all, you're a super successful business person. Like you work for a corporation, you work for organizations, but yet you are finding, and I know this, doing a podcast and organizing it and getting it out is no small feat. So how did that come about and why are you creating time and space for that in your life?
Yeah, it's interesting. I get that question a lot with seven kids and a full-time job where, and quite a bit of travel for work. Where do you find the time for this? And this isn't something I have to do. I look at this as something I get to do. I started this like a lot of people started new projects during the pandemic. COVID hit. I was locked down. I wasn't traveling for work and I needed to find something to fill a void. And what I had really found as I was doing some of that sort of early COVID soul searching was at some point in my career, I don't want to talk about when, I don't want to designate a company, but at some point in my career, I got hired as a vice president of sales for a fairly sizable corporation. And when I interviewed with that company, they said all the right things. The right things were written in the handbook. The right things were pasted on the walls. Their leadership seemed great. And gosh, about 4 weeks in, the rose-colored glasses came off. And I was I wasn't even in the worst job of my career. I was in a very unhealthy environment. And it took me years to get out of that role because A, I thought I could fix it. B, I'm the committed type, like I think many of us are. But I wanted to go on a journey somewhat selfishly to make sure I didn't make those same mistakes again. And I thought, what a selfish thing to do if I just start reading books and learn on my own. How can I share some of these experiences with other people? And then a buddy of mine, Tanner, asked if I'd come on his podcast. The idea of being a guest is actually quite easy. I just show up, I bring a mic, I bring a computer, and we get to talk for an hour. But when I got off that podcast, I realized that that was the forum where I could share not my knowledge, but the knowledge of my guests, guys like you, guys like Scott O'Neill, guys like the founder of Reebok or the president of Starbucks. And a lot of these folks talk about the mistakes that they've made as leaders over the years. And I think for me, that's been such a great learning experience.
Oh, I love, thank you for sharing that. Let me ask you a quick question, because I always love, you know, post-mortem of, you know, what you would have done differently. You mentioned you got in this really bad cultural organization, and you tried to like willpower or white knuckle your way through it. Like, you're like, can I fix this? And it reminded me of, I immediately went to a book, Benjamin Hardy says, willpower doesn't work. And he talks about, look, you can't change environment. You know, doesn't matter how good you are. You sometimes just have to remove yourself into a different environment. And so rewinding that, would you have changed the timing? Would you have left earlier, or were you like, no, the journey was okay? Like I'm always interested as certain people are listening to this, they're like, I'm in that right now. Should they leave or should they work through it longer? What do you think?
I've been really fortunate. I've had an incredible career. I've been very, very grateful for every opportunity that has come my way. In the moment, it was an unhealthy environment. It was unhealthy for me. I, of course, in fact, there's the Dr. Vince Molinaro talks about in one of his books about the physical impact. I mean, we're talking like disease that can come out of the stress and anxiety of being in a bad environment. So there's a part of me that if I put myself back into that moment, I kind of get the chills and I get really anxious, and all the feeling and emotions that were there in the moment for the few years that I was there sort of come back. But on the backside of it, I am very grateful for the opportunity, because I have learned, because when I took this role in M&A that I'm in now, I was so laser focused on the money doesn't need to be right. It needs to be in the ballpark, and the travel, we can work around the travel. For me, I didn't interview the company. I interviewed the people, and I interviewed the people because of the experience I had in that past company. So my suggestion, if you're in the moment right now, there's very strong and consistent data that suggests you need to get out. You need to get out in the right way, right? You can't quit a job without a job. You've got bills to pay and a family to feed, but go focus on taking care of yourself, because the thing that I was not aware of in the moment, I have, I think like you, an absolutely incredible wife who just took the burden that I brought home with me each and every day. So there's a part of me, I'm grateful for having gone through it, but there's a part of me, it took a toll on my relationship with my kids. It took a toll on my marriage. And so the right answer, I think the very long-winded answer is I should have gotten out a lot earlier, but I didn't.
What a real answer to your point, because oftentimes we think we can separate work and into family, but what you've just described is no, it's no longer, there's this separation, our whole selves, work-life integration, you don't get to separate. And so if you're not being your best self, and I love what you just said, interview the people, not the company.
Yeah.
And so think about the individuals as you're thinking about, hey, am I in the right spot or do I need to move on? Great, great insight. So now what I'm most interested in is you are a cultural guru. I mean, you've learned so much from all your guests. So what is your formula for culture then? Like whether I'm a frontline leader, I'm a second line leader, I'm a mom or a dad, or I'm a church leader, and I'm thinking about how do I continue to shape or improve my current culture? What does the guru say of how to start to think about this and do it?
Oh man, guru, I love it. The pressure you have put on me to answer this question. I think first of all, many of us, myself included, get in leadership roles initially because it is the obvious iteration because of the success that we've had. So I was a successful sales guy for 5, 6, 7 years. I needed to make more money. I was at a point in my career where I was looking for a bigger title. And so someone above me said, we don't want to lose Eric. So we're going to give him the title. We're going to let him manage people. And we are not going to give him any tools or resources to lead. So I think you and I might have talked about this when you came on my show. I started managing people without any idea of how to manage people, but I knew the KPIs, the metrics, the key performance indicators that needed to be measured. So I did what I obviously needed to do in my late 20s. I started measuring those. And I will tell you in hindsight, not just what I've learned, but what the guests that I've had on my show have taught me is throw the KPIs out for a period of time. You need to measure them. You're going to figure out pretty quick who's doing the job and who's not doing the job. But focus on the people. Get to genuinely know the people in your organization. There's an organization in Tulare. I've named the company. There's an organization in Salt Lake that I do a lot of business with. And I interviewed them as a part of my podcast during the pandemic. And I said, what are you doing differently that you weren't doing before the pandemic? And everyone on the executive team has, and they've got what, 400 employees now. Everyone on the executive team has a group of people in the organization that they are to schedule one-on-ones with on at least a quarterly basis. And I said, well, that seems sort of standard for an organization. He says, we're not allowed to talk about work. The focus isn't work. The focus is checking on people. And if you remember early in the pandemic, things like toilet paper and diapers were really hard to come by. And it was, they were telling me, Eric, it was about making sure that people had what they needed to care well for their family. We did not talk work. And so for me, the KPIs will absolutely measure themselves. In fact, I will tell you again, there's a lot of data that suggests if you care well for the people, their metrics, they will work harder, they will be more focused, they will stay with your organization longer, and you will be more profitable if you care well for the people. If you get to know that their kids go to school in Park City, you've got two kids that go to BYU, you've got one kid that's autistic, because then you start to understand when someone's telling you they've got to leave early, you have an understanding of why it is that they're leaving early. Maybe they're leaving early because they're in marital counseling, because they've chosen to share that with you. The other piece, there's two other pieces. Be vulnerable. So many of us as leaders, again, myself included, for a period of time, we didn't want to get real with each other. And as soon as we start to get real with one another, we find that commonality. I've shared on my podcast, my sister-in-law unexpectedly passed away October 27th of 2020. She passed away of an addiction to alcohol, a 12-year battle with alcohol. First of all, I called my boss the morning my sister-in-law passed away, and I told him I didn't know when I was coming back, but I needed some time off to care for my wife and care for her family. My email was effectively ripped from my inbox. My boss managed that. I got a care package. When I got to Phoenix, there was a care package waiting for me. There was a care package waiting for me when I got back home to Minnesota. And not once for 2 weeks did I worry about work. But when I got back, what was interesting to me is I didn't just take time off. I didn't pull that leadership card of like, hey, I need some, we're going through some family stuff and I need some time off. I had an alcoholic call me and say, hey, I heard your story, and I'm 500 days sober, and hearing your story was my motivation to continue. And so we have to get real with each other. We try and pretend that everything's fine when it's not. I don't have to share my marital problems with my team. I don't have to share my financial problems, but we have to get real and care for people. And again, the metrics, I guarantee you the metrics will care for themselves.
That's super powerful. And it's interesting. I'm working with a client right now, an organization. And I love what you've talked about is, and I wonder if it's actually not throwing the KPIs out, but realigning KPIs. And so like, how do you now create a KPI where you are showing that people matter?
Yeah.
And that do you put the KPI in that? And I think that's what organizations are a little bit struggling to do, is how do you put the people science into some KPIs? Because what you've just done is you need to keep it. I love this vulnerability, right? Like, people matter. Are you, as a senior leader, are you being vulnerable? Can we measure that? Can you put that in a scorecard that says you need to do it not just once, but consistently, because that's part of the cultural equation that leads to performance and a great place to work?
I think you can only do it if you genuinely care. If what I have just shared doesn't resonate with you, if you listen to this podcast and you're thinking Eric doesn't know what he's talking about, if I just measure how many times they knock on a door, how many times they make phone calls, or how many widgets they can manufacture in an 8-hour period, I'm actually going to make a very strong suggestion that maybe that person isn't right for leadership, because leadership starts with people. Culture starts with people. And if you can't measure caring well for people, that's not to say you're not a great person or a great individual contributor, but we've all had bosses in the past that they don't want to hear your story. Mm-hmm. They don't want to hear that your son broke his arm over the weekend. It's just not important to them. They want to know why you didn't manufacture 800 widgets. You only manufactured 700 widgets. And I'm going to suggest that in today's day and age, especially with the new generation entering the workforce, it is, and I hate to say it because it's a little cliche, but it is absolutely people first.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're 100% right. And so as you're listening to this, and to your point, not everyone is going to say, I'm ready to be vulnerable. I'm ready to, you know, some people like might even call it oversharing. But I think what you've done and just articulated as a leader, you need to determine your formula for how I'm going to show care to people. And then the second bit is, what is my level of comfort around vulnerability?
Yep.
And if you're not comfortable with it, we need you to inch more, being more comfortable with it. Get a coach, get a mentor, find somebody that's do it better. But figure out your willingness and your comfort level to be a little bit more vulnerable than you currently are, if what you just heard makes you feel uncomfortable. Because what you're saying is the rising generation not only will demand it, if they don't get it, they're going to go find somewhere else that does.
They'll go somewhere else that does. They'll go somewhere else that does and pays less. They'll go somewhere else that does but requires them to come in 3 days a week. We have this new generation of people, they're not as focused on money as you and I may have been at some point in our career, because A, they're coming out of the gates with little debt and they're really concerned. They want to find an organization that they can emotionally align to. And that includes the people that they report to.
Yeah. I was reading a trend report, a 2028 trend report. And two things stuck out to me. One is this societal cry for purpose, meaning people coming into the workforce now are going to align where they can find purpose. And then it's this other one is around episodic loyalty, meaning people, if they don't feel it, they're going to go somewhere where they will. And organizations have to start realizing the 20-year, 25-year career person is not going to exist. And maybe that's okay. Like, and it's the, you might leave and come back and leave and come back. And we should, I think organizations need to start preparing for that and saying, I need to view the tenure of an employee much differently than we have in the past.
Well, you look at the things in our society that have been really successful, and there's many, but Tom's Shoes is the first one that really comes to mind. And they might've been the first one to come to the market with purpose. But the idea, and we've all heard it before, you get a pair, you give a pair. You mm-hmm. spend $40 on a pair of Toms, and they ship a pair of Toms to some place in the world of your choosing to give that other pair of shoes. But that idea has now made its way into the mainstream workforce. And that's what we're looking for. People that just care about us as individuals and companies that are making a difference.
Yeah, I love it. When you think about culture, and I think you've given some really great insights around, you know, how you start to shape it and form it, what are some things that we should also not do?
Oh gosh, for me, and I'll just go back to that company that I worked for many years ago, all the things at the time that looked right, you know, Taco Tuesday, the taco truck would show up on Tuesdays, the free coffee, all the free stuff in the lunchroom, you know, the snacks, the donuts and all that feels a bit like culture to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. You know, the foosball table, the shuffleboard table, the pool table, the ping pong table, all that stuff in the lunchroom, that feels like culture. Splattering your walls with vinyl lettering that talks about who you are, that feels like culture. But if you're not living it out, people will see right through all of it. And this idea that I got, I'd never heard of it before, and I'm embarrassed to say I don't remember who it was, but I spoke to someone in the last year about a reverse mentor. You know, you and I think of coaches as executive coaches, someone that's been there, someone that's done that. I've got a dear friend who I look up to, who was the chief financial officer for Campbell Soup. He was the chief financial officer for a Fortune 100. He's 20 years older than me, a great mentor. But choose someone or multiple someones within your organization that don't directly report to you, that are maybe individual contributors in a different department, and allow them the opportunity to get real with you. Hey, talk to me about our culture, mm-hmm. but really motivate them in some way to get real with you. Find the people that can get real with you. Well, you say on the wall here, as I enter your office, that you're people first, but let me give you 7 examples as to where you're not people first, as to where I got in trouble for attending my best friend's mom's funeral last week. I've known the guy 35 years. How do I not go to that? And I had to take a PTO day for that. Allow a reverse mentor, someone in the organization, again, an individual contributor, to get real with you and talk about, hey, the ping pong table, it doesn't mean anything to me when the executives are sitting in these plush offices and I've got, you know, ratty old furniture, whatever it is. But just, I think the idea of reverse mentorism is something that I don't do enough, and I don't think we look for enough.
Oh my gosh. I can guarantee you people listening right now, they're like, I don't do that. And I'm not sure I've ever thought about it. I love that idea. If you're a senior leader, even a frontline leader, I love the idea of going to somebody else that's not on your team, that has no skin in the game. And when you can say to them, I need a reverse mentor where you help me see things that I'm currently not seeing. And there's no way that you're going to be punished for this, or that will show up on your scorecard or impact your revenue. Just help me see what I don't currently see. I love that.
Because I think, you know, I think of a company I worked for. They used to send out these gift boxes, these care packages, and it was like sweets and chips and things like that. And you definitely got a sense towards the end that that was what they thought culture was. Well, mm-hmm. if we give them a $50 Uber Eats gift card every month, we're showing them that they're cared for. Do your one-on-ones offsite every once in a while, where it's applicable. Take someone to lunch, get them out of the office, get them out of your office, out from your desk, take them to lunch, let them choose, go out for a steak once a month. Just do something different. Allow yourself the opportunity to build a relationship truly, genuinely outside of the office. And I think we'll all be surprised at the feedback that we get.
Yeah. Eric, this is amazing. So I'm currently working on a book.
Yep.
I love the premise of this book. And so maybe just give a quick, I think this helps people understand why you're so curious, why you're so, I think, thoughtful and authentic, but give us a little bit of a preview of the book you're working on so that we can get on the sign-up list when it's available.
Yeah. Great. Great. Thank you for the opportunity. This is a very God moment, which I won't share, but I had this realization one day that I needed to write a book, and I host a podcast all about culture and leadership. So I thought, I guess that's what the book's going to be about, right? God's telling me to write a book, and this is kind of my thing. And I was on an airplane about 8 months ago. And again, I won't bore you with the long story, but I was watching a TV show that, of all things, my 16-year-old has me watching. And I start weeping on an airplane. I'm not the most emotional guy in the world. And I just start weeping. And I have this realization that the hell that my wife and I and that our kids have gone through is something I need to share. And so I've started to, again, get vulnerable with people. I've shared it on LinkedIn and social media. I've shared it with a lot of people. And this resonates with everyone in some capacity. So I mentioned at the beginning of the show, we've got 7 kids, 21 to now 3. I almost said to 2. Sorry, Liam. 21 to 3. And our 21-year-old, about a little over 5 years ago, decided that she was going to make some decisions that we didn't agree with. And as much as we wanted to love her through them, she decided not to be in relationship with mom, dad, brothers, sisters, aunts, uncles, cousins, grandparents, the whole nine yards. And initially, I was writing a bit of an autobiography of this story. But what I have realized and what I'm writing about now is I'm going to give you chapters 1 and chapters 2 are going to be the autobiography. Chapters 3 through, let's call it 15, are going to be kind of this dip in life that we went through, where there was shame, embarrassment, frustration, anger, a lot of the sort of grief emotions of the fact that now we're 5 years in to not being in relationship with one of our kids. In fact, I'll briefly deviate and share a story. My 6-year-old got emotional a few months ago. My wife called me crying. She said, Ross doesn't want Owen, our 16-year-old, Ross doesn't want Owen to go to college. And he got really emotional. And I was like, what? He's 16. He's not going to college tomorrow. What's the issue? She said, Ross started crying and said, Mom, when they go to college, we don't ever talk to them again. And so I write about the dip, again, the shame and embarrassment and the heartache that we went through as a family. But I write it in an effort to build a bridge for others that are going through similar emotions. Because so many people go through this. I have talked to hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of people in the last 6 months. And I got a LinkedIn message not too long ago. It just said May 17th, 2019. And it was from someone I didn't know. And they replied, I didn't know how to reply, so I chose not to. And a week later, they said, that's the last time I talked to my dad. I've talked to people who haven't spoken to their adult sibling because the funeral of, you know, mom's funeral didn't go over well. And someone got the glass vase that someone else wanted. But there are so many of us that are going through, and I think COVID has exacerbated the challenges of relationships with family. And so we're writing a fairly open-ended book of what we've gone through. And I will tell you, I had a publisher reach out to me the other day and said, hey, we want to publish your book. We're going to cover the costs. It kind of seemed like a great deal until he said, but I want you to wait until you reconcile with her to finish the book. And I said, why? They said, because everybody likes a Cinderella ending.
Mm.
And I said, you know what? I don't know that we're going to have that. I hope that we do. She is welcome at our house any day, and we will welcome her with open arms. But even if I get the Cinderella ending, the thousands of people that I plan to speak to and that I have spoken to, many of them don't get that. I talked to a guy that wasn't able to mend a relationship with his father before he found out his father had passed away. So there's not a Cinderella ending. And so anyway, the book is about sort of our journey and the emotions that we've gone through, the lies and stories that we told because we didn't want to be really honest. You know, it's just easier to tell you we've got a daughter at school in upstate New York than it is to say, yeah, great question. I don't know where she goes to school. We haven't spoken to her in 5 years, but I will tell you the vulnerability of opening up and sharing our story with people has given me a sense of peace. And I think it's really given other people, we go back to vulnerability, it's given other people the opportunity to share wounds that they've suffered in silence from for many, many years.
Thank you for sharing that. It's a reminder to all of us that no one's life is perfect.
Yep.
And, you know, because you could show up, you could look a picture of you and be like, you look amazing, right? Your kids look amazing. But I try to remind people, no one has the perfect life. And what you're giving is a gift of, I think, people to say it's okay to struggle, and it's okay to recognize that life is about peaks and valleys. And you, of course, you want more peaks. And I think what I love about your book is I think also how to maybe sometimes reduce the lows,
yeah,
through sharing and, you know, some tools, and which I think is so such a powerful thing. I thank you for sharing that. You can feel both the authenticity, both the hurt, but also the hope around the whole process. And I wonder, Eric, to your point, you're like, it's not a leadership book. It's not even a culture book. Although I wonder what connections you will make, because you continue through this to build a culture of just both followership of people that are interested. You build a culture within your own family of love and everything. So it'll be interesting to see how you continue to make these ties. I am a anxious listener as you continue the journey.
Well, it'll be out later this year. And I want to maybe end this piece on two things. First of all, my post on LinkedIn the other day was social. It was simple. Social media is not real. A lot of people, myself included, listen to podcasts. A lot of you are scrolling Facebook or Instagram or LinkedIn right now as you listen to this podcast. It's not real. It is a highlight reel for reality. And so, you know, I shared a little bit about the lows that we've had over the last 5 years. Someone listening to this has not shared that they have cancer with their friend community, but that is a reality. Someone's struggling to pay their mortgage. Someone's struggling in the recession that we're in because a gallon of milk is two times what it was a year ago. We're all struggling in some capacity. And I think we need to remember that social media is not real. The other thing is the title of the book, and really the genesis, the message of the book is the title is You Are Enough. And it was this awakening one day of as a parent, as a father, what did I do wrong? Where did I go wrong? What could I have done differently? We've got six other kids. Are we going to screw them up too? All the things, the hell that we've gone through in this realization, I actually did a pretty good job. I mean, I made the same mistakes mm-hmm. as every other parent, but all things considered, we did a pretty good job of raising her. But it wasn't enough for her. But that doesn't mean that I'm not enough and that my wife is not enough. We are enough. And I won't name names, but I had a guest on my show recently that was kind enough to share his story of they lost their son. Again, their son is still very much alive, 24 years old, cocaine or heroin addict. And he goes, we have a responsibility to our son, but no longer for our son. And so just this idea that do everything you can, you're going to mess up, but for me as a child of God, I'm enough. And I don't hold any regret, but I just hold out hope that A, we're able to reconcile, and B, that this story, this book resonates with someone else. And maybe they can build that bridge as they're going through some suffering, just to experience a little bit less.
This is a true example of someone giving a generosity of their spirit and authenticity. And Eric, you've been amazing. I would like to end with this question. What is the name of the podcast, of course? What is one small leadership habit that you are practicing on a consistent basis that makes a big difference in your life and the many lives that you interact with?
Wow. I'm going to take one from Scott O'Neill. So your listeners, I'm sure, have heard this one before, but be where your feet are. I think one of the biggest challenges reading that book, which is easily one of the top five books I've read in the last couple of years, is just be present. It's so easy to sit in a one-on-one, especially in today's version of a one-on-one, where we're probably doing some variation of a Zoom or a Teams or some other virtual meeting. Shut everything out. Put your phone down, lock your email up, and just be present. When you're sitting at lunch with a coworker, someone that reports to you or someone that you report to, put your phone down. But that leadership trait should and needs to go home with you. So when you're at your son's baseball game, leave your phone in the car. When you're watching your son's baseball game, be present, be where your feet are, be in that moment. And I will tell you that I think every time I have picked up my phone since reading that book, I have second guessed whether or not whatever it is that I'm doing is as much a priority as I think that it is. And so I'll leave with my biggest takeaway in the last 2 years of hosting a leadership podcast is simple. Just put your phone down.
Eric A. Booker, you have been insightful, vulnerable, and you've left us, I think, with a really great practical leadership habit we can do starting today. Thank you, my friend.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
I hope you've enjoyed this week's episode of Small Things Make a Big Difference. Eric Booker gave us tremendous insight on how we can help shape and influence culture. I'd love for you to think about, regardless of your role and position, what is one small thing you're doing this week that's going to help shape and influence the culture of the people you're leading, the family members in your family, the community members you're serving with? Be intentional and realize that your action causes a ripple effect. Finally, Eric gives us a deep dive into his book and around how each of us are enough, and to not be to shy away or be afraid of the things that aren't going well, but to embrace them and to recognize, let's keep trying, and that each of us are amazing. We have our own unique gifts and superpowers. Let's embrace them. If you found one thing on this podcast that will make a big difference in your life, please embrace it. Also, don't be afraid to pass it along. Share this with a friend, like it, share it. Let's make this podcast part of your regular listening series. Most importantly, have an amazing week.